Track 12. Our resident historian Chris Armstrong explores the life of the Reverend Wilbert Audrey, creator of Thomas the Tank Engine, the lovable character who has delighted generations of children.
Why is it that we seem to associate the clergy with railways, especially steam railways? As a child, one of my favourite films was the Ealing comedy The Titfield Thunderbolt, in which a local clergyman, ably assisted by a gaitered bishop, who, acting as fireman, shovelled coal as though he was stoking the fires of hell, drove an antique engine purloined from a local museum in a race against time to keep a branch line open. If he saw it, I bet it didn't appeal to Dr. Beeching. Recently, I was able to acquire a DVD of the film, persuading myself that it was an essential part of the research for this article, and not just a nostalgic piece of self-indulgence. But one clergyman above all others is remembered especially for his wonderful stories of a group of engines operating on the mythical Island of Soda, believed by many to be an alias for the Isle of Man. Wilbert Audrey, for 12 years Vicar of Emnath, just within Norfolk on the Cambridgeshire border, was the man who created the world of Thomas the Tank Engine. He didn't set out to write a series of bestsellers, and he would, I'm sure, would have been astonished at the universality of the character he created and the extent to which the brand has been stretched to encompass an extraordinary range of Thomas memorabilia. He simply wanted to amuse his young son, Christopher, who was recovering from measles. His success in doing so was so great that Christopher would later write more Thomas stories for publication, extending the range of these lovely little books. In later years, both father and son introduced new character engines. But it is those early stories of Thomas Edward, Henry, Gordon, and James the Red Engine that I recall best, and which I took most pleasure from in reading in the 1980s to my sons, almost as much pleasure as I take from the memory of my father reading them to me in the 1940s and 1950s. Because Thomas started appearing before the nationalisation of the railways in 1948, in my copies of the books, Sir Topham Hatt was the fat director. Somehow he became a less entertaining figure post-nationalisation as the fat controller. Nasty word with, for me, slightly Orwellian overtones. In the days of pre-privatisation under Mrs. Thatcher, I always hoped that his title would revert to director, but it was not to be. Probably as well given the government's intention to renationalise, which means he would have had to be retitled afresh, Comptroller of the Rail Transport Division of the Ministry of Incompetence and Obfuscation, perhaps? Wilbert Audrey was born in 1911, the son of a Hampshire clergyman, but the family moved to Wiltshire when he was just 6 years old. He was educated about 40 miles from his home at Dauncey School. Railways were a major feature of his childhood. His father was an enthusiast both for model railways and the real thing. As a toddler, Wilbert would have watched with interest as his father built a model railway at the vicarage which stretched for 40 yards. According to Wilbert, his father was so enthusiastic about trains that he required the nickname the Railwayman Parson. When the family moved to Wiltshire, they changed houses two or three times before settling in a house they appropriately christened Journey's End. This house was close to the Great Western Railway, at a stage where it climbs a 2 mile gradient and heavily laden goods trains struggled sometimes with the climb. Wilbert recorded much later in his life how as a child he had lain awake at night as the engines puffed and grunted up the incline, imagining the conversations which they might have shared had they been able to talk. And it was the conversations between his fictional engines, the arrogance of Gordon, the cheekiness of Thomas, the occasional lack of confidence in James, and his pride in his red paint that builds the characters of each individual engine in the reader's mind. It gives the parent reading to the toddler the opportunity to develop a whole range of reading voices, the gruff tones of Gordon, the cheeky cheeps of Thomas, the strident cries of Henry as he refused to leave a tunnel so the rain would not spoil his paintwork, all offer an opportunity for a parental display of dramatic skill. Mind you, I suspect that my elder son, born when I was working in Liverpool, preferred the voice of Ringo Starr in the best television version of the stories, though I thought he made them all sound the same. But life moves on, and soon Wilbert had to forego the pleasure of hearing the engines climb the hill. And after leaving Daunce's, he went up to St. Peter's, Oxford, to read modern history. After graduating, he was awarded a diploma in theology at Wycliffe Hall. He then went to Jerusalem to teach at St. George's School. In 1933. At the time, Palestine was governed by the British under a mandate issued by the League of Nations. But it was not a calm time there. In fact, by the time he returned to England, after about 3 years, revolution was in the air. Perhaps the most important result of his time in Palestine was that it was there that he met his wife, Margaret, a fellow teacher whom he married in 1938. Returning to England, he was ordained and embarked on a series of curacies, not just in his native Hampshire and his childhood Wiltshire, but also in Birmingham, where he was from 1940 to 1946. This period must have had its challenges for him. He was a pacifist and was well known to be as a member of the Anglican Pacifist Fellowship. He was a curate in a city that was, after London and Liverpool, the most frequently targeted by the Luftwaffe. Hardly surprising given its Spitfire factory at Castle Bromwich and its armaments factory at Small Heath. But his reward came when in 1946 he became rector of Ellsworth in Cambridgeshire and subsequently vicar of Emnath in 1953. He stayed there until his retirement in 1965 when he moved to Gloucestershire, where he continued to write. It was while he was in Birmingham that he first came up with the idea of telling stories about a group of engines. They were told to his son Christopher. It was his wife Margaret who had the idea of seeking a publisher. So we have her to thank for the first 26 books in the series, which her husband wrote. The first was published in 1945, the second a year later. This was quite an achievement. War had resulted in the rationing of paper, and during the war there was something like one-third of printing staff were reported to have left the industry. To succeed in finding a publisher for an unknown author was pretty difficult. The attraction was, of course, the books themselves. They charmingly displayed a more normal, cheerful and optimistic world than that with the dangers of wartime or the austerity, which continued for so long afterwards. This probably appealed as much to the adults as the bright colours and the short, snappy stories did to the children. If there was a good time to launch such a genre, that was it. But it is the quality of the work which has meant that the success has never faltered. It is that quality and the appeal of the stories that have led to the translation of the books and the dubbing of the television series, which means Thomas is known from Albania to Vietnam, from Azerbaijan to Uzbekistan. Who cannot be moved by the thought of children in these places, chuckling at the antics of Thomas and his friends? Wilbert Audrey was a remarkable man, an extremely well-informed railway historian, a volunteer in the cause of railway preservation, a railway model enthusiast, and a gifted storyteller. He has not been appreciated by everyone. In the 1970s, his stories were being criticised by some for supposed sexist and racist overtones. I cannot recall a single incident in any of the books from which any reasonable person could draw such an inference. I suspect those who did were those who also sought to ban the Biggles books from libraries on similar grounds. I feel sorry for their children. Their prejudices mean that they missed out on the delight of some wonderful stories. William Audrey's achievements were finally recognised with the award of an OBE in 1996. Sadly, he was not fit enough by then to travel to London to receive it. It was presented to him in his own home by the Lord Lieutenant of Gloucestershire. He died the following year and is remembered not just by a memorial window in Emnath Church, but also by a body of work appreciated around the world, which initially brought cheerfulness in dark times and is still left today.